Welcome to the Love Your Truth podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Chrisman, personal development and spiritual teacher. Each week, I will be bringing you an inspiring guest or thought that will help you move beyond fear and doubt and unlock your true potential. Because you know there's something inside of you that you want to express and a kind of life that you want to create. We're going to be talking about personal development, spirituality, wellness, and manifesting the life of your dreams. You'll get a blend of practical and spiritual advice where woo-woo meets neuroscience that you can begin applying to your life today. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Love Your Truth podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jen Chrisman, and I'm so happy to be here with you today. I have been holding on to this episode for almost a year now, knowing that at some point I would come forward and I would share this story, and also knowing that it was going to take a little bit of time for me to get to a place where it felt aligned and in integrity for me to talk about it. And I think I'm ready. I think I'm at that point now. And I've gone back and forth around the intention behind sharing it and how is it helpful? How is it supportive? I talk all of the time about the noise that's out there in the personal development world right now and how, you know, there's so much talking just for the sake of talking, and that's never been my MO. It's never been who I am as a person, and this has actually, you know, full disclosure, been something that has been quite problematic for me in running a business, because there is a lot of marketing that, requires consistency. And I can understand and I really appreciate the importance of having consistency, because I do believe that it supports the development of trust and developing and deepening relationships. And part of my, you know, navigating the waters of just who I am is that I can be a little bit inconsistent at times. And there are phases and seasons where it seems like I have a lot to say, and then there are seasons and times where I really don't have anything to say. And I'm just a big believer in living by that motto that unless you are going to improve the silence, then maybe you just don't need to say anything at all. And so I've really sat with this story that I'm going to share with you today, and I've held it in my heart from a consideration of how does this help? Is this helpful to anybody? What is my intention behind sharing it? And I've come up with a few understandings within myself as to why it feels important to talk about. One, it feels really important to me from a place of transparency and being in full integrity within myself as I step forward as a teacher, especially as I am reopening, or I should say opening for the first time, the life coaching certification program that I've been doing for the last 2 years, but I've been doing with my best friend and my partner. I'm doing it for the first time on my own. And as I step into this next evolution of my work, the story feels really important that people who come into this world, that they have the full understanding of my path, of who I am, of how I got to be where I'm at right now. I also was thinking about it in terms of an episode that I recorded a few months ago around this question of, does everything happen for a reason? And looking for the meaning in all of life's experiences. And I think that this is a personal story of how I have handled a situation that really threw me for a loop, rocked me to my core, and the process of uncovering and finding the meaning in it. So there's a few layers to this, and I am, you know, before I get into talking about the story, I will say that without question, this is the most vulnerable story that I am sharing publicly. And I, as you listen, I want to first lead with, again, the immense gratitude that I have for you being here, for the opportunity to share this story. And you know, the just a really heartfelt moment of acknowledging that there's an opportunity for me to share something that has been so challenging, and that, you know, whatever your interpretation of it is, however you hear the story, and if it changes your perception of me in any way, that, you know, just acknowledging that there's something so beautiful that is available to us through this channel of communication. And I don't take that lightly. And I know I can sound like a broken record because I say this all of the time, but it really is, it means so much to me. This podcast is so important to me. And those of you who take the time out of your day to make your way over here and listen, it feels like such a special relationship. And some of you I have spoken to directly, some of you we've messaged through IG, and some of you we have never had any direct contact with. And all of you matter to me, and I'm so thankful. And again, as you listen to this episode, just know that I ask for grace and compassion as you're listening, and an understanding that you know, I'm still working through some of this experience, a lot of this experience. And and just as you're listening, just know that you're gaining access into a really sacred part of my personal life. And I know that everyone here you know, enters and comes in with the leading with the love and compassion, and I know I don't have to worry about that, but you know, I'll just throw that out there that this isn't easy to talk about. So let's get into it already, Jen. Come on. So I'm actually going to share with you the story and the circumstances behind why I am no longer practicing as a licensed clinical psychologist. So before I get to why I'm no longer practicing this way, we're going to back up just a little bit and talk about my journey to becoming a psychologist. And I had, honestly, I had never had any intention of being a psychologist. Truly, that was not going to be my path at all. And I always thought I was going to be a teacher. When I went to college, I thought I was going with the intention of becoming a teacher. I thought I was going to be a high school history teacher. Why high school history? Because I had an amazing high school history teacher who truly changed my life. And I actually wanted to be a teacher my entire life because of the impact and the role that my teachers had always had on me. School was without question my safe place when I was growing up. If you know parts of my story and my background, I did not grow up in a safe or stable home environment. There was a lot of turmoil. There was a lot of neglect. There was a lot of abuse. And I channeled all of my anxiety into school. It was where I found safety. It was where I found structure. It was where I found healthy boundaries. And I also happened to be just naturally very gifted and very smart as a young child. And so school, like the actual school work, was really easy for me. And because of my sensitivity and because of just the nature of my personality, I was also just a really good kid when I was little. And so my teachers loved me, and I always had really just such, to my teachers and school, elementary school I'm talking about here, were just, it was my safe place. And so I grew up my whole life thinking that's what I was going to do. I was going to be a teacher. And I went to UCLA. They didn't have an education major. And so I started off as poli-sci, thinking that would be great for a history major, a history teacher, and realized very quickly that I did not enjoy the poli-sci major. And so I switched to psychology. Again, always with the intention that I would get my undergraduate degree and go on to get a teaching credential and become a teacher. So when I graduated from high school, I ended up getting a job at a, they called it a non-public school. So it's like not a private school, but it's still funded by government. And it was a school that was for basically the kids who had gotten kicked out of public school, learning disabilities, different emotional distress and disorders. And I had also been, when I was in college, I'd been working with autistic children doing applied behavioral analysis. It was kind of what everybody in the psych department did as a job. And UCLA was kind of like leading the charge with autism treatment and awareness at that time. So getting a job at this school was a really, it was a natural next step. And as a part of the team for this school, because it wasn't a traditional education or a traditional school setting, there were psychologists on staff, there were psychiatrists on staff, there were behaviorists. It was a whole holistic approach to working with these kids. And I ended up meeting and working side by side. I was working with a few psychologists, and then I was also working with this girl who was very similar. We were on very similar paths, but she was going the route of becoming she was going to become a marriage and family therapist. And at the same time, I had a really good friend of mine, one of my best friends actually, who said something to me that kind of changed the entire direction that I thought I was going to go. She told me, when talking about futures and what we're doing, she said, "Jen, you're too smart to be a teacher." And she didn't mean that as a knock on teaching as a profession. She meant it from a place of making money, actually. Because, again, that was a big part of my story. And she knew something that was like deeply affected me and was important to me and was something I wanted to heal and change in my life. And so that planted a seed for me. That was a true seed, was that I wanted to change the trajectory of my life in regards to my financial situation. And having grown up with a single mom who couldn't keep a job because of her addiction, various experiences of, being homeless and living with my grandmother until my mom was able to get an apartment, but then her not being able to keep her job, and just the amount of hurt that I carried because of how I grew up in regards to money. I knew that I wanted to make money. I didn't want to continue to feel what I had always felt my entire life. And my friend was right. You know, at the time and still now, but, you know, getting a teaching, a first-year teaching position at that time in my life, I was looking at, you know, $36,000 a year, which living in Los Angeles, even though this is 20 years ago, you know, I couldn't afford rent on my own with that. So this seed is planted now. And at the same time, I meet this girl who is speaking so highly of this program that she's in, the master's in psychology, and she's going to become a marriage and family therapist. And I start, you know, those wheels start turning for me. And I started doing some math because I had been in therapy. I knew how much my therapist charged, even though that's not what I paid her because she saw me on a sliding scale. She charged $175, and this was like 25 years ago. And again, I did the math and I was like, well, whoa, hold on. If I charge $175 an hour and I have a full practice, that's a lot of money that I can make. And so that was my driving force going into and deciding that I was going to go into a program to get a higher education in psychology. It wasn't just money driven, obviously. It felt to me like it was the perfect melting point, the merge of how can I do something that is healing and helping the world, right? Because I had been so helped in my life. I knew that I was going to do something where I could take my story and my experiences and use them for good in the world and also make a living doing it. So I went into the same program that she went into, this friend of mine that I had met. And I was there about two semesters. Actually, it was quarter system. So I don't know, I was there till like January. And I knew after my first class that this wasn't the right setting for me. I was young. I had just graduated UCLA. My ego was a little bit larger than life at that time. I'm not proud of it, but it's true. And this school, it was a liberal arts college. And they didn't give grades in this program. And I remember thinking, right, I just came out of UCLA. And I remember thinking, like, how is everyone going to know how smart I am? And so, you know, all I can do is laugh at myself now and like laugh with love. Like, oh, sweet, you know, ego-driven Jen. God bless her. She was doing the best she could. But I very quickly transferred into a doctoral program because, again, my ego felt like that was what I needed to prove myself, to be good enough, all of the things. And I knew very early on that there was something that wasn't totally in alignment for me. And like the actual school itself, was fine. It wasn't challenging for me from an academic perspective, but my intuition was whispering to me at the time, but the truth was I didn't have any relationship with my intuition at that stage in my life. And so I didn't know how to listen to it and I would ignore it. And I can remember during my third year in my graduate program, I'm in an internship setting, and I remember sitting in the back office where all of the interns would gather and hang out, and we'd wait for our clients. And I remember sitting there, and I remember just thinking, "Oh my gosh, I hope my client doesn't show up." And having this moment of awareness of Jen, what are you doing? This is you're too early on in this journey to be having this feeling like you're not in it. And I remember having the conversation with myself that being really honest and saying, I don't love this work. But I felt like I had given too much of my time and too much of my money to the process. I had taken out already at this point, I'm close to six figures in student loans. And again, because my perspective on life was so limited and so narrow at that time, I didn't know that there was anything else I could do. And I had taken out this money in student loans, and I couldn't imagine that there was another path for me where I could make money that would be able to pay back these loans that I had taken out. And so I kept walking this path, even though I knew it's not fully aligned for me. And this isn't a knock on therapy. There is a lot of value in the traditional therapy model. And there was a lot about it that just didn't feel right for me. There were, it wasn't a good fit. And I can get into the reasons why it wasn't a good fit, but that truly might be another topic for another time. I really struggled with the Western medical model. I struggled with the need to diagnose people and treat disorders. And there was something that was inherent in the setup of doctor-patient model, even though I never called ever once. I never called my clients patients. They were always clients. There's still a natural hierarchy that is created in this environment. And there was something about that that never really sat well for me. And then there was also a lot around, honestly, my codependency and my, you know, how hard it was for me to not want change to happen in my clients. And so I was constantly in a place of like, what else can I do? How else can I work? What other, interventions, treatments, like modalities, styles? I was constantly in a state of like truly never feeling good enough. Which really took a toll on me. So this is kind of the foundation that my early experience as a therapist, what it looked like. And when I graduated, a few years now, I've been doing this work, and really, like, I'm finding my flow. And I started to find my confidence and my belief and a deepening and an understanding of what the work actually is, and being able to stand behind that work. So, you know, for me, as I shared this in an episode a few episodes back, the coaching relationship and how the relationship in and of itself can heal. And I do believe it's the same thing, whether it's a coach or it's a therapist, really having a container, right? A space. It's the space within that is where the healing can happen, and being able to detach myself from particular outcomes with clients, you know, finding my flow with how do I do this work, yet still at the same time recognizing that I'm a part of a system that isn't fully aligned for me. The Western medical model, insurance, diagnosis, treatment plans, all of these, all of these moving parts that I was like, oh gosh, I don't love all of this. Now, at the same time, I did really well in my practice, and I grew my practice mostly from word of mouth. I had some online exposure, Back in the day, before it was popular to have online exposure, I was published in a few websites and blogs that really helped generate some traffic my direction. And I ended up, you know, just getting to a point, I had two small children, where I was really capped out of my practice. I was seeing as many clients as I wanted to be seeing, but also knowing I wasn't finished growing. There was more I wanted to be doing with my business. And so I did what most people do at this point, what most therapists do, and I got interns. And I was supervising interns that were working under my license, and I would send them referrals, and we would do a fee split, and I would supervise and mentor them and coach them. And what I learned from that process was that I loved my favorite thing in the world, actually, was mentoring these developing therapists. I didn't love, however, being an employee or an employer. I'm sorry. I didn't like being on the hook for whether or not these therapists went out and implemented what we had talked about from marketing and, you know, how to grow their practice and all of that. And so that opened me up kind of evaluating, well, what am I doing? My favorite thing in my working life was when I was essentially coaching these interns, because, you know, at this point in the game, the interns that I was taking on, they weren't, you know, brand new, green, you know, fresh, like in school interns. They'd had some time under their belt and they were looking for more professional mentorship rather than, you know, handholding supervision with clients. That was still a part of it. But I really saw that there was this spark that was lit inside of me when I was doing this work with my interns. And so I had the idea at that point that I wanted to do that. And I wanted to be able to teach others how to be successful in this field. And I wanted to inspire others to think bigger and dream bigger and create more for themselves. And so I launched an online business. It was called A Perfect Practice. And I coached therapists in developing profitable private practices. And again, as I'm doing this work, I'm seeing the shadow side, kind of the underbelly of this world of therapists and psychologists, and you know, blessing and a curse that I'm able to see some of these things. It's so interesting because in so many ways I have such a, like, sometimes my fiance will say, like, a naivete about me, because I see the good in so many people. But yet at the same time, I also have this ability to, like, really see the shadows. And I was, as I'm in this world and developing this business, I'm seeing how the culture of the psychology world, the therapy world, is there's so much shame and judgment around people who are choosing to desire more, dream bigger, grow more, shine brighter. And, you know, it's kind of like celebrated to be small and play small. And, you know, it was really hard for me to look inside of this. And I was like, gosh, like, and I wanted to ignore it, and I wanted to, you know, turn it on me and, like, okay, Jen, what is this in you? What do you need to shift? What do you need to change? But I started to, again, seeds were planted in my undergrad around the culture, around the work. And then I have, you know, I'm running this business and I'm just seeing it more and more and more, despite the success that I was having, there was a lot that I was seeing that I was like, gosh, it's just none of this is sitting right. It's like not aligned for me. And at the same time, I joined this mastermind, and I'm now in this world of online coaches. And I remember sitting in the first mastermind group, and I'm looking around at this room, and it's like filled with coaches who charge like $10,000 an hour. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but I really don't think I'm exaggerating that much. And I remember sitting here thinking, like, oh my, like none of them have any training. None of them have any education. They barely even have experience. How is this possible? And I was like, there's zero chance. Like, there's no way. I can't, you know, aside from the fact that, like, from an integrity place, like, that's just not me. But, and not knocking anyone who does that. I'm actually not. It's more like truly just about my personal alignment. But coming from the field of being a therapist, like I was capped at 500 an hour. Like, you cannot justify charging more than that, really. As a psychologist, I was like, gosh, there's no way. And yet here I am, you know, invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in my training and my education, years, right? 8 years of the work that went into getting to a point where I, you know, could charge $100 an hour. And so I'm looking around, and the whole time there's just this, you know, that gap between where I'm at and what I'm like, it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I was, at this time, I was in this Facebook group for therapists, and I have a, you know, business coach who is kind of like stoking the flame a little bit of like, you got to be polarizing, and, you know, and my feelings towards this community and like what I'm seeing and all of this like smallness and the judgment of others and like shaming and criticizing. And like, I mean, the therapist in this group, like, it was like ruthless. And so I ended up posting something, and I shared in this group about my feelings, like how toxic this group was. And oh my gosh, wow. I was not expecting the backlash that I received from this group. I mean, people did not like what I had to say. And I immediately was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And even though the truth was, like, it was really honest what I said. It was my true feelings. And could I have said it in a way that was less aggressive? Definitely. I certainly could have. But it got to a point where, I mean, there were like hundreds of people commenting on this post, and, you know, every derogatory name in the book that you can think to be called. And essentially, I was just saying how, you know, the group felt really unsafe. I was seeing all of this like harsh judgment from people, and, you know, and then people were like saying it was like clickbait, and I mean, just, it was wild. The admin for the group ended up, they locked me, like they silenced me. I wasn't allowed to respond. I wasn't allowed to, like, I was trying to like clarify for some people, like, that wasn't actually the intention of what I was saying. Like, here's what I was trying to say. They stopped me from being able to speak, but then kept the public comments open so people could continue to just like berate me. And this moment was a major turning point in my life. And I was like, wow, everything that I have been feeling about this community, about my place in this community, about where I belong, and do I belong here? And is this in alignment for me? Like, okay, I was just shown, like, all of those feelings that I had were confirmed of this isn't your place. And, you know, and again, like, my approach to it, definitely not the best. Like, certainly learned a lot about, even for someone like me, who, like, I'm not a feather ruffler. Sorry, the dog is barking in the background. I'm not a feather ruffler. And so for me to put this post out there and then experience the backlash that I did was, I mean, I was sobbing hysterically for days afterwards. Just the shame that I felt that I shared something in this way. And, you know, how could I have been so, like, made such a big mistake? And then also, but like, wait a second, this is my truth. And now I'm, like, sharing my truth and this is what's happening. And then, like, all of the, you know, victim-y aspects of my personality, right? Like, they were so mean to me. And that's definitely a thread. Like, I'm sensitive. I don't like it when people are mean to me. But that's, again, another conversation in and of itself. So this happens. And this was around, I want to say it was probably like October of 2019. So at this point, I'm now, you know, I'm into this, like, online coaching world. My best friends are coaches. They're, you know, doing so many more things than I can do because of my role as a psychologist and, you know, feeling like I'm in this teeny tiny little box. And I said, and I decided in that moment, I'm done with this box. I don't want to be a psychologist anymore. I still want to do this work, but in my own way, right? I want to do the work that is supporting people on their path of healing. I want to do this work and supporting leaders in becoming better leaders. And I really want to help coaches and, you know, developing therapists and in the mentorship process of finding their stride and becoming themselves. But I don't want to be a psychologist. I don't want people to come to me with, you know, their label and diagnosis of depression and, you know, have a insurance company, like, audit my treatment records to see, like, what the treatment protocol is for depression. Like, I don't want anything to do with that. So I decided that in January of 2020, I was going to tell everybody that I would not be renewing my license when it came up for renewal that March. And that's what I did. January came and I told everybody I am not renewing my license. And this was a big deal. You know, I'd worked so hard and I had a lot of conflicting messages. Like, so many people are like, just keep it. Like, you can do so much more. It gives you more validity, more credit. And you know, I think some people were confused that I wouldn't be, you know, Dr. Jen anymore. I was like, no one's taking my doctorate away. Like, that's my degree. I have that degree. It's just this license, the, you know, the hours of studying and the tests that I took and the supervised hours and all of that. But, you know, I still did it. And I worked, you know, practiced for 10 years as a licensed psychologist. And if I ever wanted, I can renew it again. You know, I can go back and redo it. It wasn't like it was a permanent decision. So I felt really good. I felt really, really clean. I was really optimistic and really hopeful about what was going to happen. So this is now, we're in January of 2020, and I tell my practice, and everybody was, for the most part, like, just about everybody. There were a few people that were already kind of naturally going to transition out. We'd been working together long enough, and we were at that phase where it would be a good time to terminate the work. And so I felt really good about this. No one was scared away. No one, I didn't get any harsh, you know, judgment or criticism from anybody about it. And at the same time, right around the same time, I want to say it was like end of January, maybe, I get this envelope hand delivered to me by the mailman at my office, a big manila envelope, and it's from the Board of Psychology. And I was like, that's interesting. And I open it up, and as soon as I open it up, I can see that it's like legal papers, and my heart starts racing. And I'm, you know, I can feel like the blood flushing through my body and the panic that kind of comes over me. And I look at it, and the initial thing says that the Board of Psychology has filed charges against me. And I go into a panic. When you see something like this, it's like, you know, a client is suing you, and I'm like, running through, like, what can happen? Is this because of the post that I made? Did someone, you know, is there retaliation? Like, what's happening? I'm freaking out. And I'm like flipping through these papers, trying to figure out, trying to see, like, where does it say what's happening? Well, I end up like reading through it finally when I can like gather my senses. It was not easy to find. I was like, I don't even know what's happening. What are these charges that are up against me? So it turns out, the no client, there was no other person, nobody filed charges against me. The board themselves were filing charges against me for unprofessional conduct because they had asked to see a copy of my continuing education credits, and they didn't receive the copy of it. So they had filed these charges saying that I was, you know, not acting professionally. And I look at this and I was like, what? So I dig a little bit deeper, and it turns out, sorry about the dog barking. So it turns out that what had happened was that the board had sent a letter asking to see the copies of my continuing education. Fine, that's no big deal. Like, okay, let me send them to you. However, they had sent the letter to my old office address. When they sent, I had moved out of that office into a new office like almost 2 years prior, and they sent a letter to an old office. No one forwarded it on to me. No one let me know, like, hey, you have mail here. I never got this letter from them. Never got it. And they had also, in their defense, they had also sent me an email saying, hey, we sent you this letter. You haven't responded to it. Like, you need to do this. But they sent the email. The email was dated when I'm seeing this as I'm going through. The email had come in the day before my mom died. So I never saw it. So I'm going through this, and finally, like, I settle, and I was like, okay, fine. This is all one like giant misunderstanding. Not a big deal. I fill out the form that says that I would like to have a hearing so that I can explain the situation. And because I knew, I was like, this is so silly. It's an administrative, you know, confusion mix up. Like, granted, I'm sure there was something on my end, because admin is not my strongest strength, that I probably could have done better. But the truth was, this was one, like, it was just a mix up. And I was like, I can clear this up, no problem. So I asked for the hearing, and fine, no big deal. So now, cut to a few months later, we're in March of 2020, and this is when my license is set to expire March 31st. And it was about, you know, March 15th, March 17th, when the world shut down because of a pandemic. And I panicked a little bit. I freaked out, truly. I was like, I can't let my license go now. Like, there was so much uncertainty, and there was so much fear in the world that I got scared, and I was like, I can't make a huge life change like this now. This is not the time for me to make this transition, because I went immediately to like the doomsday, and, you know, no one's gonna, like, the economy's gonna crash and the world's gonna come to an end and clients aren't gonna call me. But if I have a license, maybe they'll still call me. So I'm not kidding you, in a matter of two weeks, I got all of my continuing education units done. I wrote the check and I renewed my license. Because I was so concerned about making a transition like that, even though, again, it wasn't in alignment for me and I was acting from fear. And what do we know? What do we know about what happens when we're acting from a place of fear? Usually doesn't work out in our favor. So I renew my license, and at the same time, I'm in conversations with the lawyer that's representing the board about, you know, I tell him, here's the situation, like it's just a mix up. And he says, okay, you know, bring your, a copy of the lease agreement showing when you moved into the new office, your mom's death certificate and your continuing education, bring it to the hearing. I said, okay, fine, easy. I can do all that. Not a big deal. You know, I'm thinking we're just gonna, you know, wash our hands of this and be done in 5 minutes. Well, thank you, COVID. I get an email notice saying that the, you know, courts are closed, hearing has been postponed. Okay, that's fine. There's like a few random kind of messages back and forth between this lawyer and myself. And I don't even have a lawyer, because I was like, this is such like not a big deal. I don't need one. I can handle this on my own. It's a 30-second mix up that we're going to take care of with a snap of a finger. So anyways, we're, you know, kind of corresponding back and forth. Courts are closed, waiting for a new date. And next thing I know, it's about August, and I receive a notice, or it was an email saying that I had missed a court date. And I was like, what? I was completely taken aback by this, because the last correspondence that I had said that the date had been postponed because of COVID. Well, I guess they were doing something online, and I didn't receive any sort of confirmation of that. They said they sent emails, but I checked everywhere, never to be found. Maybe it was in junk mail. I'm not really sure. This goes back and forth for quite some time. And at this point, we've been dragging it out for a few months. I'm incredibly frustrated. I feel like 2020 has taken its toll on all of us. And I finally just throw my hands up in the air, basically. And I said to this lawyer, through email, and I told him, you know, what do I have to do to just make this go away? Like, what can we do to just resolve this, like without the hearing, because I'm getting too many confusing messages. You're telling me it's canceled. The court's saying it's on this date. Like, I don't know what to do anymore. I just want this to be over. And so he says, let me talk to the board and I'll get back to you. I said, okay. So he comes back to me a little while later and he says that the board is willing to like resolve this, I guess, if you will, under a few conditions. One, they're going to do like some sort of a public reprimand. So basically there would be like this public letter that would go out telling everybody like the charges that they brought against me, and basically like not quite a suspension. It wouldn't be a suspension. It would more like an asterisk on my, like next to my name, essentially, of yes, she's licensed, but you know, she's on the naughty list, kind of. So that's one thing. And then they also wanted $8,000 in legal fees and fines and all of these things. And it didn't feel right to me. It felt really unnecessary, actually, but I agreed to it. Excuse me. I agreed to it because I just wanted it to be over with at this point. And so I write him back. I said, yes, I agree to these conditions. And this was in October of 2020. And I don't hear anything from them. I hear nothing. Again, I'm like waiting for some contact. I'm waiting for like a bill to come in the mail, something saying like, hey, you owe this money. Here's where this, you know, here's your public, you know, letter of shame, your scarlet letter, whatever it was. And I hear nothing from them. Nothing.
So I'm like, oh, what am I supposed to do? I mean, I guess I could have followed up and said, hey, do you want me to pay this fee? But I didn't. I waited for them to come to me. And I didn't hear anything until August of 2021, almost a full year later. I get this email that came from another department of the Board of Psychology. And the email was saying that they were going to take legal action now against me. And my initial thought when I opened this email, right, you have that moment where like your body like goes into the fight or flight and the panic kicks in. My thought is that this is going to be because of the unpaid legal fees and fines that they had. That wasn't what it was. They were going to press legal charges against me because, and it said it right here in this email, I was representing myself as a psychologist after my license had been revoked. And in that moment, I remember my head absolutely spinning. And I couldn't understand. I was like, my what has been what? Apparently, they had revoked my license back in February of 2021. So I agreed in October, didn't hear anything. They revoked it in February. And again, I never heard anything from the board. I never got a letter. I never got an email. I had no idea, truly no idea that this had happened. And so I, you know, responded to the email. I told them I had no idea. They were actually like very lovely. It was the easiest exchange I'd ever had with them. They asked me to remove the title of psychologist from, you know, a few places online. That's fine, no big deal. And then I was, and like in a matter of, you know, 24 hours, I had to reach out to all of my clients, tell them that effective immediately, you know, some of them I was going to be seeing tomorrow, that effective immediately, we had to switch over to the, you know, coaching contract and, you know, no longer practicing as a psychologist. And then I was left with the processing of this experience and what had happened. And, you know, the first place that I went was a tremendous amount of shame and embarrassment and these feelings like the feeling like I had done something wrong and I was backtracking and I'm, you know, sifting through and I'm reading like every single email, like, what did I miss? Where did I miss this? And the shame of, you know, I had my license had been revoked, like taken from me. Like I had done something so horribly wrong that I needed to be punished for it. And this was a really, there was so much grief around this experience, and there was so much sadness that I had to sit with and like really let myself feel. And as I, you know, as the dust settled, I saw the other side of this, which was, you know, essentially the way that I will put it is that God or the universe was doing for me what I wasn't willing to do for myself. I had said for almost 2 years at this point, and when I'm really honest with myself, I had known for much longer that it wasn't the work I wanted to be doing. I didn't want to be a therapist. I didn't want to be a psychologist. But I kept doing it because I was scared. And when I was in grad school, I was afraid of changing my mind. I was afraid of admitting that this wasn't what I wanted to be doing. When I was getting ready to let the license, you know, expire and not be renewed, I was afraid of making that change. I was afraid of letting it go. I was grasping. I was holding on.
And so the universe came in and essentially it was like, here, I'm going to, you know, fling you off of this cliff. And, you know, talk about an act of surrender, talk about, you know, the ultimate, like having to let go. Because I, who knows how long I would have held on to it for. And so, you know, what is the message? What is the moral of the story? You know, essentially, it's just this. It's, you know, what happens when we don't follow the truth of our soul? What happens when we hold on and we cling to situations, people, titles, labels, when they're no longer serving us? How do we make meaning out of situations and experiences that can be really painful, really challenging? So, you know, I it's been almost a year now since this has happened. And, you know, when I talk about it, I still can feel that part of me that comes up that is afraid of the judgment, the part of me that is still, you know, I can still access the feelings of shame and embarrassment. And also, you know, really knowing at my core that this experience was exactly what it needed to be for me. Because I don't know how long I would have held on to it. And, you know, without it, yeah, I still kind of struggle with, like, you know, the question, what do you do? It's a lot easier to just answer that, I'm a psychologist. That's really easy answer versus what do you do? Oh, I certify life coaches and, you know, help them grow their own practice or mentor other coaches. I don't know. What am I at? Who am I? What are labels? But that's another conversation too. So, the experience has been one that has brought in so much expansion, but it only brought in expansion because I let it. It brought in expansion because I was open to the expansion. I could have sat in the shame. Like I said, I can still access it. Right, I can still, you know, go back to that moment last August. I was at the beach and I opened up my phone and I read the email on my phone, and I can still feel that moment. And I've also found a deeper meaning in it, because that's what I've chosen to do. Because in any given moment, you know, we have that choice that we have to make. What am I going to do with this experience? What am I going to do with this situation? Am I going to allow this to, you know, as cliche as it is, make me bitter or make me better? And so I chose to find the good. I chose to make meaning out of this experience that empowered me, that served me, that rather than feeling like a victim, right, a victim to the system and like misunderstood and all of those things, right, feeling like, wow, I was so supported. I was so supported, right? These forces that are at work that are so far beyond what I can comprehend, like orchestrating and working this entire experience so that I can walk the path that is in alignment, rather than continuing to play small or live in fear. So that's the story. That is the true story. Did you ever watch that show on MTV? Right? True story. You
You think you know, but you have no idea. The true story behind why I am no longer licensed. And I hope that this served you in some way. I hope that it was helpful for you. I hope that you are able to hear this experience and either, you know, feel into an area of your own life where maybe you are being asked to find the good or find a new meaning for something. And if you have any questions, or you have any comments, or you have any thoughts, I would love to hear from you. It really does mean the absolute world to me when we get to have those conversations. And message on Instagram is the best way to get a hold of me. I'm here. And then also for my coaches, for those of you that are interested, I have a few offerings for you. First, I have a super fun little quiz that I created. It's so fun and it's so sweet to help you determine what your coaching personality is. And when you know your coaching personality, what are the gifts that come with that? And also, what are the blind spots for you to be aware of? So you get a great little PDF along with that when you take that quiz. I also have a free workshop for you. It's a 5-part workshop on how to create a powerful coaching experience. This is for you, whether you are an experienced coach or you're thinking, should I be a coach? Do I want to be a coach? And we go through what it takes to be a powerful coach, as well as how do we create real change, both in ourselves and someone else. Techniques, like actual tools that you can use to work both with the subconscious mind as well as the body. We talk about how to create an abundant coaching practice and how to fill your practice with your dream clients. And it's all free. And, you know, this is an actual training workshop. It's not just a plug. There's no bait and switch that's happening with this workshop. It's really intended to provide as much value as it can, regardless of where you're at. And then finally, of course, there is the certification program, and we're kicking off the inaugural cohort in September, in fall of this year. That's a few months away. And, right now the applications are open. This is a full certification program. It's a 6-month program of actual training and techniques. You have lifetime access to the curriculum content, but the hands-on live trainings, it's a 6-month program. You'll also get a 3-day retreat that's going to be held here in Los Angeles. I'm going to be holding it twice a year. You can come to either of the dates. And I'll put the link in the show notes if you want more information on that program. Again, it's a full certification. You're getting certified in life and success coaching. You're being certified in NLP, EFT, and hypnosis. I'm also considering right now putting in some breath work in there. I have to sit with that a little bit more and see how it's been asked if we want to include it. People have asked that I do include it. So if that's something that you're interested in, and I really do mean this, that, my philosophy on coaching is that leaders go first. And whether or not you have any interest in actually becoming a coach, taking yourself through this process will change your life. It will. And, this is the work that is what creates change and transformation. So if you're interested in checking that out, I will leave the link in the show notes. You can get all the information. And I'm also happy to hop on a call with you and answer any questions directly. And I have there's a special discount if you sign up during the month of July. Before August of 2022, there is $1,000 off your tuition cost, regardless of what payment plan, whether you pay in full or you do one of the payment plan options. So there's all that. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing me to share this very vulnerable experience with you. I am so thankful and so grateful for this community and that you have taken the time to be here. I love you with my whole heart, truly, whether we have actually met or we haven't yet. Please know how much you mean to me and how thankful I am for you. And I will look forward to being here with you on the next episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Love Your Truth podcast. Now I have a favor to ask of you. If you found any value whatsoever in this episode, it would mean the absolute world to me if you would share it with someone else, someone who you think might benefit from hearing anything that was shared in here, or if you feel so inclined, go ahead and leave a review. Reviews do so much to support the message and to support getting this out into the hands of others who need to hear what's being talked about. So again, thank you for being here. Thank you for choosing to spend your time. And I will look forward to seeing you in our next episode.